for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland just before 9 o'clock here on your Thursday morning. We're about in about an hour. Join us for Air Cascadia with Chris Andre and all the news and views you could use. At 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, Investigative News Journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Leanne Krantz will be speaking with local writer Megan Cruz, who has just released her debut novel entitled Call Me Home. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures with host S.W. Conser. That is all coming up, but stick around. Up next, it is an hour-long press watch with host Teresa Mitchell giving you all the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around. That is next on KBOO.
Looks like these kids are going to have some fun, doesn't it?
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of PDX Cocoon and their first public storytelling event on Thursday, March 12th at 5 p.m. at Lola's Room in Portland. The theme of this first storytelling event is Risk. PDX Cocoon is a student-led group that is working to facilitate storytelling for Portland youth through workshops and events. Again, that's Episode 1, Risk, by PDX Cocoon on Thursday, March 12th, 5 p.m. at Lola's Room, below the Crystal Ballroom at 1332 West Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'd sure hate to be left out.
Fellow weirdo, this is Rich, host of Radio Lost and Found. Be sure to check out the show on its new time slot. That's every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour media escape of found records, tapes, found sound, internet insanity, and more. That's Radio Lost and Found every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
Hey, weirdo! Come out and play!
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Let's get down to bringing out some of the stories that will actually help you to destroy billionaire rule. Congratulations to all of you for surviving for another week the combined threats of climate disruption, oceanic depletion and irradiation, Jim Crow death squads, and the Pentagon's imperial nuclear war agitations for another week. Hasn't it been fun? Let's go to the U.S. Municipal Jim Crow Death Squad update first. According to the police chief, authorities had received a 911 call about a man who was jumping into traffic. This is not in this town. And 45-year-old Officer Matt Kinney was sent to the scene. Upon arrival, he says he saw 19-year-old Robinson causing a disturbance and reportedly chased him back to his house. Forced his way inside, the officer says upon entering the home, he was hit on the head and knocked down. The officer said, that's what the officer said, said the officer. He responded by withdrawing his weapon and firing several shots at Robinson, who was pronounced dead at a local hospital. Turns out Robinson didn't have a weapon. Officer Kinney, meanwhile, has been placed on paid administrative leave. He was previously cleared of wrongdoing in a fatal officer-involved shooting in 2007, in which he shot a guy to death who was pointing a pellet gun. According to the police chief, Robinson was a suspect thought to be responsible for a battery that had recently been committed. But even he admitted that this will be a complicated case because yet another unarmed black man has been killed by a white cop. That's going to make this all more complicated for the investigators, for the public to accept, he said. Meanwhile, thousands of angry protesters across the U.S. are already organizing efforts to protest the shooting. So, this comes in the context this morning. Two officers were shot in front of the Ferguson Police Department early this morning as demonstrators gathered after the police chief resigned in the wake of a scathing Justice Department report alleging bias in the police force and the local courts. St. Louis County Police Chief John Belmar said one officer was shot in the face just below his right eye with a bullet lodging behind his ear. The other officer was hit in the shoulder and the bullet came out his back. Both men were expected to recover without suffering any long-term damage, Belmar said, but the wounds could easily have been mortal. The 32-year-old officer was shot in the face, and he came from nearby Webster Groves, and the other one, a 41-year-old, came from St. Louis County. Both were taken to a hospital, where Belmar said they were conscious. Authorities believe the shots came from a handgun. There were no suspects in custody. Based on where the officers were standing and the trajectory of the bullets, the shots appeared to be aimed, directed at the police. Quoting Belmar, this is really an ambush. You're basically defenseless. It is hard to guard against. And speaking for myself, the idea of American police as defenseless is a pretty silly idea. But returning to big news for this morning, cops shot in Ferguson. The shots were fired shortly after midnight as protesters gathered following Wednesday's resignation of the embattled Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson. Before the shooting summit, the protests chanted to show their dissatisfaction with the resignations of Jackson and City Manager John Shaw this week. And that's according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Authorities from multiple law enforcement agencies also assembled at the scene. The protest was a familiar scene in Ferguson, which saw similar and much larger demonstrations after the shooting death of black 18-year-old Michael Brown last summer, should say unarmed Michael Brown, by a city police officer, Darren Wilson. A state grand jury cleared Wilson, who was white, in November, sparking further protests, looting, and fires, but Thursday morning was the first time an officer at a protest had been shot. By the way, there's no federal charges against George Zimmerman today. Returning to the article from Minneapolis Star Tribune, in amateur video accessed by Associated Press, two shots ring out and a man is heard screaming in pain. Someone at the scene, unseen and unidentified in the video, says acknowledgement 9 months ago would have kept that from happening. Marcia Pitchford, 20, was among the protesters. She told Associated Press that the protest had been mostly peaceful until she heard the shots. So that's the latest on the Jim Crow Municipal Death Squads. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Billionaire ruler update. Why do we allow billionaires to suck at our lives and freedom? The latest thing is that they are trying to get fast-track authority for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is an attempt to ship out more jobs, and to give corporations, international corporations, sovereignty over U.S. law. It's a bad deal all around, of course. And you don't know much about it because they've been doing it in secret, because they know how much you would hate it if you really understood just what a nasty little ploy it is. So this is the latest thing that the billionaires want to run it through Congress real quickly without anyone actually reading it. That's called Fast Track. And the vote on whether to give it Fast Track is coming up, you should know. They'll be able to suck your blood much more efficiently if TPP goes through. More and more of the so-called bomb trains, the long tanker car trains loaded with hyper-explosive toxic radioactive oil, have been passing through Portland and many municipalities in the U.S. I've seen them at Union Station. I've seen them at the Union track yards over by Greeley. I've seen them at the rail yard that is next to Holgate Street. The Koch brothers, class of billionaires, decided a while ago that a steady set of explosive disasters, which is utterly predictable with these things, along with the human toll that it will take and has taken, is a minor price to pay for the profits they are raking in from the oil and from your tax dollars subsidizing their operations. For the Koch brothers, your money is no object. Here's an excerpt from an article in Counterpunch by John Flanders titled Exploding Trains in Crude Oil. Quote, "There are two ways to apply brakes on a train. The air brakes that run the entire length of the train, and dynamic braking, which reverses the locomotive traction motors, turning them into generators, which slows the locomotives down and, as a result, causes the cars to bunch up. That's called slack action. Air brakes, on the other hand, are applied on locomotives and the cars together. With the entire train slowed down by the air brakes, obviously more fuel will be needed to get back to speed. Hence, the railroad's current directives are to maximize profits. 100-car oil trains are incredibly heavy compared to mixed freight or intermodal trains, so it's not just oil company and carrier greed for cash-generating cargo like fracked oil to blame for current disasters. You can also chalk up the railroad's desire to save just a little more fuel at the expense of safety for the mess we are in," end quote. So, let me explain that just a little once again. If you use the air brakes, the way the trains are designed, air brakes are actually brakes that are mounted on huge springs. And to get the spring-loaded brake off, off the wheel, to get the shoe off the wheel, you have to pump an air brake full of air. So it's kind of a fail-proof system. If a car gets loose from the train, its supply of air, pressurized air, is cut off. And that way, the air can't force the air brakes away from the wheel, and the air brake forces itself onto the wheel with its giant spring. You run air down the length of the train to release the brakes, and also to brake, you release some of the air, whatever amount you want. You keep those brakes tuned so that you apply them more or less evenly. There's some differences, but never mind that. So the train stops. And what I'm saying here is that for the sake of profits, trains, and this includes the explosive oil trains, are being stopped by allowing all the cars to ram into each other. Oh yeah, I'm not even kidding. And allowing that momentum to slam into the freight engines in front. You've seen them with a 100-car oil train. There are several engines. And this allows the engineers to brake the train by essentially reversing the function of the electric motors. The electric motors then put drag on the train, and this generates electricity. It saves all kinds of money on locomotive fuel and also is a very dangerous procedure. Well, this is what they do. And there isn't anybody saying, that's not good for the people, and so we won't allow you to do that. No, because we're talking about billionaires' profits here. And even though billionaires would still be billionaires and still be rolling in the money, if every train was stopped safely, that is not happening. So I just thought you might want to know just how far a billionaire will go to get a little more money while screwing you around, while blowing you to bits, or burning you to death. Speaking of billionaire energy, this from Fukushima Daiichi. TEPCO admitted that another drain has been letting highly contaminated water flow to the Pacific since when 311 took place, that referring to March 11th of 2011. The drain outlet is situated outside of the plant. Port drained contaminated water has been directly discharged to the sea. TEPCO became aware of this fact last April, but kept concealing that for nearly a year. It is the drain located in the north part of Fukushima plant. It runs between reactors 5 and 6. The outlet is just outside the north end of the port. As long as TEPCO announces they have been taking the data of contaminations, that's a scrambled translated sentence. Let me try that again. TEPCO has announced they've been taking the data weekly of the contamination levels since April 16th of last year. Their data showed up with cesium-134 and 137 and strontium-90 jumping up every time it rained. And so it's just when it rains, it drains. And that's been going on for these 4 years. You're listening to Press Watch. And this is KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I've been giving you the Fukushima update. And I want to give you the war updates, too. And preceding that was the Jim Crow Death Squad update. And the latest news is that someone shot cops in Ferguson. They're saying with a handgun. Important to consider that it is with a handgun, that, and we are not talking about a military-style sniper operation, as far as we know so far. Time is 9:15 Pacific. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Here's a U.S. war update. Venezuela, already the victim of a massive failed coup attempt in 2002, is in the Pentagon's gun sights again. As I pass on this information, please remember that Venezuela has vast, vast reserves of oil. What does Venezuela have? Oil. I think I could just leave it at that. But anyway, the U.S. War on Oil Profits machine is gearing up for a big horror show in Europe and the Middle East, and they want that oil. So found an article on VenezuelaAnalysis.com, which sums things up pretty well. This is, of course, pro-Venezuelan propaganda. But looking over it, I think it's mostly correct. And so I'll just read it verbatim. Atilio Boron writes, Barack Obama, an ornamental figure in the White House, who was not able to impede a lunatic like Benjamin Netanyahu from addressing both houses of Congress to sabotage the talks with Iran on the country's nuclear program, has received a strict order from the military-industrial-financial complex. He must create the conditions to justify a military aggression against the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela. The presidential order issued hours ago and broadcast by White House Press Office establishes that Venezuela is an unusual and extraordinary threat to the national security and foreign policy of the United States, end quote. And it declares that it's declares a national emergency to deal with that threat. This type of declaration tends to precede military aggressions, either by its own hand, as was the case in the bloody invasion of Panama to overthrow Manuel Noriega in 89, or with the one issued in relation to Southeast Asia that culminated with the Indochina War, especially in Vietnam starting in 64, talking about the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution. Returning to the text, but it can also be the prelude to military operations of a different kind, in which the United States acts jointly with its European minions grouped under NATO and the region's oil theocracies. For example, the first oil war in 91, or the Iraq War of 2003-2011 with the enthusiastic collaboration of Britain's Tony Blair and Spain's unpresentable José María Aznar, or in the case of Libya in 2011, erected over the stage farce in Benghazi, where so-called freedom fighters, who later turned out to be mercenaries recruited by Washington, London, and Paris, were hired to overthrow Gaddafi and transfer control over the country's riches to its masters. More recent cases are those of Syria and especially Ukraine. And departing from that paragraph, I'll have more on Ukraine in just a moment. Where the much yearned for regime change, a euphemism to avoid talking about a coup that Washington pursues ceaselessly to redesign the world, above all in Latin America and the Caribbean, in its image and likeness, has been achieved thanks to the invaluable cooperation of the European Union and NATO, and whose result has been a bloodbath that continues in Ukraine today. Miss Victoria Nuland, Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs, was sent to Kyiv's Maidan Square by Mr. 2009 Nobel Peace Prize, a.k.a. President Obama, to express her solidarity with the demonstrators, including the bands of neo-Nazis that would later seize power by storm through blood and fire, and to whom the kindly official was handing out bread and water bottles to quench their thirst, to demonstrate with such an affectionate gesture that Washington was, as always, on the side of liberty, human rights, and democracy. When a rogue state like the United States, which is because of its systematic violations of international law, which it is because of that, issues a threat like the one we are commenting on, it must be taken very seriously, especially if one remembers the persistence of an old U.S. political tradition that consists of carrying out coups that serve as a pretext for justifying its immediate military response. I'm talking about Venezuela and reading comments from VenezuelaAnalysis.com. Your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. I'm passing along this information to let you know that situation versus Venezuela has again escalated. And there has already been a coup attempt in the last couple months. And agitation is ongoing to push it through. And in the meanwhile, as the article was saying, there has been a declaration by the United States that Venezuela is now a terrible threat to national security. And apparently this is said with a straight face. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Thomas is on the air.
Yeah, good morning, Teresa.
Morning.
Just a few observations about the latest round of bipartisan demonization of Venezuela. I thought it was interesting to note, among other things, that the administration mouthpieces in their press conferences and releases and whatnot went at great pains to say that they weren't engaging in a broad base economic embargoes against Venezuela. Including the energy sector. Well, it's noteworthy to note that, in fact, it's one of the two, same difference. It's either Chevron or Exxon that has a big lucrative contract for pumping oil. So, kind of conspicuous that that's not an issue. But you know, it's interesting if you look at it in comparison to the tentative steps at warming relations with Cuba. And you see this incredible ratcheting up of this demonization of Venezuela. And if, of course, Venezuela has done approximately zero to harm U.S. interests, you know, I would say it exposes the fact that you know, something like a Cuba demonization is needed. And perhaps, you know, this Venezuela is serving that purpose, the idea that you just cannot have some country in Latin America that the United States does not use as a lightning rod for its propagandistic efforts to convince the American public that there's some sort of creeping menace against the United States, which is really...
Right. Well, of course, there is a creeping menace against oil profits, because the Venezuelan government, since Chavez, would like to apply some tax and... basically have control of the oil that's coming from under their own sovereign territory. And that is absolutely anathema to Uncle Sam.
Absolutely. And, of course, there again, I mean, it's a strange game they're playing, because U.S. oil companies are partners in extracting that oil from Venezuela, so they don't want to push it too far. But, you know, and it's amazing. Another thing that made it perfectly clear to me is when I hear these pronouncements, for instance, when one of the – I can't remember which particular – State Department mouthpiece it was in a press conference said, when confronted with the idea that of the allegations of perhaps another coup being plotted against the government of Venezuela, which is something we know has happened in the past in recent history, saying this is ridiculous, this is conspiracy theory, what have you, and if the United States, I don't remember verbatim, but it was something to the extent that the United States does support non-democratic changes of government. And then, you know, the fact that that woman wasn't just absolutely laughed off the stage makes it clear to me something, you know, and that is this, is that these pronouncements that we see in the U.S. media, and undoubtedly they make it around the world too, but this is for domestic consumption, that the administration and the powers that be, they don't even mind the fact of how that plays internationally, because...
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, because, of course, in a macro sense, in a real sense, it does matter, because... It shows the blatant hypocrisy of the American government to everyone except the Americans. And one final comment, you know, the college-educated liberal voter is just as completely clueless, apparently, about what's going on in Latin America and the real history of U.S. intervention as you are about the TPP, because I've been talking to people for several weeks now who are just kind of mainstream, friends of mine who are mainstream sort of Democrat voters, and you know what? More than half of them, I dare say 70 or 80% don't have any clue. When I say TPP, they don't even know what I'm talking about. And if that to me is truly frightening. It shows how the people who would actually have common cause with being aware of some of these issues such as TPP are just completely being defeated and absolutely left in the dark by their chosen media sources, including PBS.
Yes, it's working well, and I think that's why we have to bring up this sort of thing on KBOO and bring out the truth as best we can and see what effect we can have. Hey, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
Number to call, 503-231-8187. And the conclusion of what I was reading before is that no one could be surprised if in the following hours or days Obama authorizes a secret operation of the CIA or some other intelligence services or maybe the armed forces themselves against some sensitive U.S. target in Venezuela. For example, the embassy in Caracas or perhaps they'll begin some other deceitful operation against innocent civilians in Venezuela, as in the case of the terrorist attempts that shook Italy, the murder of Aldo Moro in 78 or the bomb in Bologna. And the Bologna train station in 1980, just a couple of examples, to create panic and justify the empire's response in restoring human rights, democracy, and public liberties, which is, you know, newspeak for putting in the dictator of Washington's choice. And I'm going to take another couple of comments, and then I'll turn to Ukraine in just a moment. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and Sonny's on the air.
Teresa, once more, I must say, I so much appreciate your lively commentary and your just keen insight and illumination of all these problems, and don't you wish that Godzilla could just rise out of the ocean near the nuclear power plant
and eat
Mothra,
it?
And that they'd come in or come over here and straighten us out and stomp around the world and straighten out everything.
Well, we'll just have to make a people-zilla and do it ourselves.
Well, there's the truth. I was going to say, of course the media inundation, which is, of course, totally mind-fill, except for KBOO. Anyway, that's the idea. Keep everybody drugged through their TV, their video games, their Kentucky Fried Chicken, and just keep them drugged. And maybe this is just a teeny, teeny idea, a trade fair. If someone would allow us to have a giant parking lot for a day somewhere around the city, we can all get together and start trading things and the certain skills that we have. I can do this, I can do that, and then you can do this or that. Let's work it out. And I've got clothes here, and you've got, because we've got to just walk away from.
Well, I have seen such
things.
We've
got to run away from it quickly. Run away from it.
All right. Well, what you're talking about, I have seen every Thursday on at the Fraternal Order of Eagles parking lot there on the corner of I think it's Hawthorne and 50th. They do have such a thing going on, so you might want to contact them.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you. Please keep doing what you're doing. And yeah, I will contact them. I think that's nice that they're doing that. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. All right. Now let's turn to the nuclear war update. This from International Business Times. Those commies. The United States is sending 3,000 soldiers to Russia's doorstep. They're going to be there for training exercises with the militaries of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. The deployment by the Pentagon comes amid rising tensions with Russia on the crisis in Ukraine, in which most of the West accuses Moscow of instigating the military conflict between pro-Russia separatists and the Ukrainian military, departing from that text as if. But we're talking about the Baltic states. This is from the International Business Times. They write, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania are all NATO countries that gained membership in the alliance in 2004. about 750 U.S. tanks, helicopters, and other equipment are scheduled to arrive in the Latvian capital of Riga. According to Army Colonel Steve Warren, the military exercises are expected to last 3 months, although Army General John O'Connor said the equipment will stay for as long as required to deter Russian aggression. And the exercises were planned as the three countries become increasingly concerned over Russia's aggression in eastern Ukraine. You know, if you listen to NPR, you get this, and to BBC, you get this constant propaganda line that is really pretty much the opposite of the truth, that Russia is, before I say this, this isn't a black and white situation. Russia does what Russia does. And there are a lot of Russian advisors in the region, but you get this more than an impression. They drive home again and again and again that the West, meaning you and me standing side by side with Ukrainian freedom fighters, are defending themselves from an invasion by Russia. This is the opposite of the truth. It is the opposite of the truth. And so I am here to say that this propaganda is war propaganda. It's being used to drag you in emotionally so that you will either accept or just become bored with and not pay attention to the fact that nuclear war is being threatened. And it's kind of hard to overemphasize this, but when I say nuclear war is being threatened, that is the extent to which the Russians have been riled up by this business that is on their doorstep. It is as if Russia had turned over Canada and Mexico to have 750 tanks and helicopters and APCs and things like that on the border of the United States. What do you think the response would be? Do you think maybe the U.S. would arm some people in Mexico and Canada in that case to try to dial that back? Russia is aware that it cannot compete with the size of the U.S. military, not even slightly. And so they are relying on their nuclear weapons. They have said this over and over. Nuclear weapons, 10,000 of them, are being shined up, brought to bear, paraded off our very coast, saying, hello, pay attention to this. Here is a Tupolev 94 bomber from the Cold War with cruise missiles from the 21st century, saying, look, we could blow you to radioactive bits, and we would prefer to do that, is what Russia is saying. We would prefer to die with you than to live on our knees, being constantly confronted. Here is Ukrainian crisis news. This is about 2 minutes long, and I'm going to see if I can play this over the microphone here, an unusual thing. But I got here a bit late for getting it on the usual lineups. Let's see if this works.
Ukrainian troops have violated the ceasefire region more than 400 times after signing the peace agreements in Minsk. Edward Basurin, a spokesman for the Defense Ministry of the Donetsk People's Republic, DPR, said on Tuesday. According to Basurin, the most difficult situation remains in the vicinity of the Donetsk airport and south of Mariupol, where Kiev is pulling units of armored vehicles and servicemen. Random shelling of DPR forces' positions from firearms and mortars continued all through yesterday. An accident involving two of the APCs on the way from Kiev to the town of Berezan in the Kiev region resulted in the death of a Ukrainian soldier. Two APCs connected by a rigid tow hitch jackknifed, sending the leading vehicle to the left and the towed APC to the right, where it flipped and fell into a ditch. The driver of the leading APC, who reports say lost control of his vehicle, was killed. The purchase of a group of antiquated AT-105 Saxon armored personnel carriers from the United Kingdom was hailed by Ukrainian leadership as a major boost to the country's military. But even British military equipment can't protect pro-Kiev soldiers from their tactical genius. Moscow has announced end of activities under the Treaty of Conventional Armed Forces in Europe, CFE. In accordance with it, the Russian Federation has taken the decision to halt its participation in meetings of the CFE Consulting Group from March 11, 2015. For many years, the Russian Federation has been doing everything possible to maintain the treaty, initiated talks on its adaptation, and ratified the adaptation agreement, Moscow said Tuesday, adding that all such efforts have been dismissed by NATO in favor of the alliance's expansion. Following the Duma, or Russian parliament, President Vladimir Putin has signed the ratification of a law that sanctions Russian participation in the $100 billion BRICS bank on Monday. The BRICS bank, Putin has said, will become one of the largest multilateral financial development institutions in the world. The BRICS bank, launched last year, will fund infrastructure projects in Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, and challenge the dominance of the Western-led World Bank and IMF. The end of activities under the treaty on CFE and the participation in BRICS bank are only a few of the many marks of US's unipolar world disintegration. Washington has ignored international rules and cheated in the game for far too long, so some of the players have just reshuffled the cards.
So you can find that at thesoccer.is. That's thesaker.is. And they have a almost daily video update. So that is the other side's propaganda, which I present with music and their wordings and just basically the recording, because you receive so much propaganda from BBC, as I was saying, and from NPR, National Pentagon Radio. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. And when you're listening to that audio to the video, they referred to BRICS. That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And when China gets together with other countries and decides to form a bank, and they're talking about forming their own currency, that really is a significant challenge to the U.S. dollar. And challenge to the U.S. dollar, very significant historic thing, and it could mean that you could become, at some point, and because of all of this aggression, because of the U.S. arrogant, unilateralist military threatening of the world, in retaliation for that, a situation could arise in which your money becomes relatively useless. And I'm sorry, the engineer, Rock, is so good, and he gives me the names of the callers so many times, and I am such a ditz, I have once again forgotten. So could you tell me again, Rock, who's calling? Okay, Mary Jane is calling. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hello, Mary Jane.
Oh, good morning, Teresa. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, renewing KBOO member, first-time caller on your show, and thank you for all the truthfulness, the passion, and the knowledge. I'm not hooked up to any internet, no smartphones, so I like KBOO for all the music and everything. But I just want to make a quick few comments about my recent coast trip. It was beautiful, but there was no sea stars, and I know you'll probably say something about it. The ocean is dying. And also, the sea urchins that we did see were looking very sickly. And also, what was very interesting, when we were hiking up from the tide pools, we met a young couple from Ferguson, Missouri.
Wow.
And they were here, they're here for 5 days, and they started up by Portland, and they were going coast and Eugene, and then down to Klamath and Crater, I think. But I thought it was very interesting, because we... You know, we spoke with them, and what they commented, Tony was the young man's name, we were the friendliest people that they had met since they'd been in Oregon. Going to Eugene, there's some friendly folk down that way. I don't know how long they were in the Portland area. They were just here for a quick trip, but it was nice meeting them and having a little conversation. And I did also want to, since it was Women's International Day, Harriet Tubman, Rachel Carson, would be turning over in her grave, and the parallels between herbicides and radiation, which she in Silent Spring refers to, and also Karen Silkwood, which is not mentioned very often.
Karen Silkwood.
And thank you, Teresa, and I'll get off. I just want to make those comments. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for supporting KBOO. By the way, if you'd like to support KBOO, that's how we do it. We don't get money from the government. We don't have to worry about the government cutting us off. We don't get money from corporations. We don't have to give a damn what the corporations think. We just get it from you, and that allows the news and public affairs, which I would like to say I am very pleased with, especially in the last several years. The news department under Jenka Soderberg, the public affairs under Kathleen Stevenson, I'm just so pleased and grateful that it just seems to get better and better and more relevant. And I think that KBOO is more relevant than ever in this way, and I'm so glad that we are a presence on the web and can be easily streamed. And so if you're listening on the web right now, you can click the tip jar and join KBOO. You can, you know, I haven't done it on the website, but I have my hoodie from the pledge drive, and I've been seeing more and more of those hoodies. I really enjoy them. So you can join and get yourself a hoodie or another gift that we would like to pass on to you, even if it's just a t-shirt or a mug or what have you. The tip jar right up there at the top at kboo.fm. Now you're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9:39 Pacific time. I was talking about the 3,000 soldiers and 750 tanks, helicopters, and other equipment that are being sent. And I was watching some video on that. The tanks indeed are being offloaded. By the way, you are not safe from M1A1 Abrams tanks either. The Pentagon certainly contemplates using those to intimidate U.S. populations should we get so out of control as to consider taking democratic control of the nation away from the billionaires. So you need to know that as dangerous as an M1A1 tank is, it depends on a turbine. Turbine engine, which has an air intake, which is at the top of the tank. It's next to the turret. It's pretty obvious. You can see the vanes. That turbine must keep going at a high rate in order for that very, very heavy tank to move. You can stop it by ripping open a sack of concrete and throwing it into the vanes. It might take more than one sack, but that's just something you might need to know for the future. 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Don is on the air.
Hey, Teresa, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, I wanted to talk about the police, but before I do, I wanted to mention that, you know, it's just amazing. You got this Fukushima thing with three reactors burning right to the earth, letting out massive amounts of radiation. They're pouring ocean water onto it, and it's running right back into the ocean. And
yes, indeed.
And the billionaires aren't doing anything about it. It makes you wonder, and then we got this potential Third World War coming up, and it just makes you wonder if they got another plan. But what I really want to talk about is Joan Hardisty, and I want to thank her again for having a great interview with Drum and Con this morning. And I hope the news people are listening, because there's a couple things brought up this morning that are really, really important. First of all, they were talking about the training that they're doing. Apparently, the cops, what they're worried about, their biggest training is not being ambushed in their cars. You know, how often does a cop ambush in the cars? You look at Ferguson, New York, Seattle, they're not in their cars when they're eating donuts. So maybe they should train with that. And the fact they're not training for de-escalating hostile or people who are upset with them for good reason, and you know, who walk around carrying phones and things. The fact they're not training for that is ridiculous. But here's the worst part of it. There was a caller called in and said she went to the training center. She said they were using dummies. They were black. They were using pictures.
I heard that.
To practice with it, people who were painted gray. Well, gray. What do you mean, brown skin people? You know, and so here, this is what they're using to train. It's not probably not Portland here, but it's probably everywhere. But here's the big deal. This guy who's the auditor, who got an award apparently, and he was not even given access to the training center to verify whether this is even true or untrue.
Auditor, are you talking about locally?
Yeah. Drum and Con said he would not. He was not given access to the training center when he did his report. That's, I can't believe that. How could they keep him out? And so, as far as I'm concerned, it's probably very true that they're using racist symbols to practice with. And as far as I'm concerned, Upchuck Hills, it's your police bureau. You need to resign if you're allowing this to go on. Thanks a lot, Trace.
Thank you for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Been trying to give an update on the situation in Ukraine. And I want to talk with you as well. And I'm going to talk to John in just a second here. But I want to start off also talking about the propaganda that you've been hearing about the ISIS crisis. I want to remind you of that train, that long line of brand new Toyota pickup trucks that started the whole thing. And I want to remind you that it was known, it was reported even in the media, that that long line of pickup trucks was coming to attack Iraq. You remember that more than a year ago? And I also want to remind you of the road of death in which people are trying to escape in pickup trucks, armored personnel vehicles, tracked artillery tanks were absolutely slaughtered to the last man with uranium ammunition and cluster bombs, because the U.S. can do that in broad daylight on flat desert territory. Now, how is it that nothing was done to this threat, aside from taking pictures showing masked men with machine guns in the backs of those pickup trucks to frighten Westerners with? Why were they not blown to shreds? Why do you think? You think it was a mistake? You think somebody said, whoopsie, I meant to blow them up yesterday, but oh gosh, we'll just let them go? Do you think it was a humanitarian gesture on the part of the Pentagon? Well, I don't either. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and I believe John is on the air.
Good morning, Teresa. So I would prefer that the Russians and the Russian speakers in eastern Ukraine be referred to as ethnic Russians rather than pro-Russian. Because I think referring to them as pro-Russian is conceding to the Western propaganda.
That's true. I've seen them referred to as Russophones as well.
But then all of these are really sideshows. The Arctic Ocean has not been freezing over for past several decades. In fact, the amount of the Arctic Ocean that was open ocean this past winter is the greatest expanse ever.
Now, I've been keeping track of that, and so I want to hedge on what you just said a little bit. It most certainly has been freezing over, but it's been freezing over less and less, and the ice has been getting dangerously thin.
And there's a very good chance that the Arctic will be totally ice-free before September 1 of this year.
That's possible.
And I would urge people to go to Sam Carina's website, arctic-news.blog, for what he's forecasting that could be a possible scenario. That, you know, we should be paying far more attention in our emergency management to what's happening in the Arctic than any of these sideshows in Ukraine, Iraq, or elsewhere.
Okay, arctic-news@blogspot.com.
Yeah.
And their first article says September 2015 without Arctic sea ice, ? Showing an image graphing the amount of sea ice. And question is, what would happen if the Arctic sea ice kept falling to, say, under 11 million square kilometers by the end of April and then followed a trajectory similar to 2012 the next 4 months? And apparently he's done a computer simulation of that and come up with no ice at all. So that's a possibility. That is something definitely to be considered. And you'll be hearing more and more about the threat of the methane bursts, which are becoming more and more obvious as the craters appear in Siberia. That would be absolutely catastrophic if there's no ice at all. And I believe that you are correct in pointing out that we are headed that way. If it's not this year, then it's going to be sometime in the next few years.
Yeah, and actually, the Arctic ice methane is boiling off of the East Siberian Shelf. And if you look at some more on what his site says, that the methane concentrations in the atmosphere in the Arctic Ocean are over 2,400 parts per billion. In 1750, it was 750 parts per billion. At Mount Loa, it's almost 2,000 parts per billion. And so it's coming off of the East Antarctic, East Siberian shelf. It's not those little occasional craters. It's boiling off the methane clathrates from the seafloor. But he goes on and discusses in that the opening paragraph you read possible scenarios about consequences of the Arctic being ice-free by the end of August this year.
It's terrifying and needs to be looked at squarely and needs to be worked. It needs to be acted on democratically, and I think that's the sort of thing that really terrifies the powers that be, and that's why you have so much corporate money going into denying it. Thank you very much for your call. 503-231-8187. And David's on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, and great topics. You know, the whole issue of ISIS and Ukraine, you know, we're just American hegemony out there. You know, I think the people, the Russians going into Ukraine might be considered freedom fighters for the ethnic Ukrainians. We don't know. And you know, the U.S. is in there. They're stirring up something to try and do some regime change. And so the propaganda we get from the public media, mainstream media, is horrendous. The same thing about ISIS. I mean, the barbarity of beheading people and burning people. Yeah, well, I don't think it's any worse than being killed by a drone missile a few thousand miles away, I mean, the burning is still the same.
Well, and if ISIS is such a threat, then why are there not efforts to expose and cut off the wealthy Saudi funding?
Well, yeah, and you know, the other thing, it's not, you won't get this on the mainstream media, is Hillary Clinton pulled a George Bush in Libya. She was convinced that there was going to be some nerve gas put out by Gaddafi, and so she wouldn't even listen to reason that Gaddafi was trying to make a phone call to say, we're not going to do that to our people. Clinton, Hillary Clinton ordered, at the State Department, she ordered the general not to take any calls from Gaddafi because they had already started the gears to do regime change. And they, look what happened. We have ISIS now. And you don't have to dig very deep to see all this stuff. It's out there. But if you're just numb, dumb, dazed, and confused by the reality TV and corporate television, you won't get that.
ISIS is very handy. Focusing on ISIS and on beheadings is very good for distracting people from a great number of things, not least of which is the fact that that Sunni insurgency is very handy for dividing Iraq, for lowering the price of oil, and the logistics of obtaining the oil and the politics of obtaining the oil in the near future. And that's what it's really about.
Right. And you know, the other thing is the outrage that you see on some of these images, yeah, it's outrageous. But I would ask everyone in the U.S., if we had some foreign power with a drone plane hovering over our cities all day, and then we see a drone strike of, let's just say it's Somalian has an enemy in the U.S. So they have someone they don't like, so they're gonna assassinate this Somalian in the U.S. And then they kind of miss and they blow up a neighborhood or a wedding in the U.S. Can you imagine the outrage if that was us?
28-1
drones over our skies.
That's how many civilians have been killed per target. 28-1
Right.
And that's worse than arrogance. It's a war crime, and we are collectively guilty of it. Thank you very much for your call. Time is 10 till 10 o'clock, and the number to call 503-231-8187. I've been talking about ISIS being funded by the West, and reports, this is from Professor Tim Anderson in Global Research, reports that the U.S. and British aircraft carrying arms to ISIS have been shot down by Iraqi forces have been met with shock and denial in Western countries. Few in the Middle East doubt that Washington is playing a double game with its proxy armies in Syria, but some key myths remain important amongst the significantly more ignorant Western audiences. And that would be you and I here with National Pentagon Radio, with the BBC, and with the even worse U.S. corporate networks. A central myth is that Washington now arms moderate Syrian rebels, both to overthrow the Syrian government and to supposedly defeat the extremist rebels. This claim became more important in 2014 when the rationale of U.S. aggression against Syria shifted from humanitarian intervention to a renewal of Bush's war on terror. A distinct controversy is whether the al-Qaeda-styled groups, especially Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIS, have been generated as a sort of organic reaction to the repeated U.S. interventions or whether they are actually paid agents of Washington. Skipping ahead in the article, according to Cy Hirsch's 2007 article, The Redirection, the U.S. would make use of moderate Sunni states, not least the Saudis, to contain the Shia gains in Iraq brought about by the 2003 U.S. invasion. These moderate Sunni forces would carry out clandestine operations to weaken Iran and Hezbollah, key enemies of Israel. This brought the Saudis and Israel closer, as both fear Iran. While there have been claims that ISIS, the ISIS caliph, al-Baghdadi, is a CIA or a Mossad-trained agent, these have not yet been well backed up. There are certainly grounds for suspicion, but independent evidence is important in the context of the supposed U.S. war against ISIS. So the question is, what is the broader evidence on Washington's covert links with ISIS? Not least are admissions by senior U.S. officials that key allies support the extremist group. In September 2014, General Martin Dempsey, head of the U.S. military, told a congressional hearing, quote, I know major Arab allies who fund ISIS. Senator Lindsey Graham of the Armed Services Committee responded with a justification, quote, they fund them because the Free Syrian Army couldn't fight Syrian President Assad. They were trying to beat Assad, end quote. The next month, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden went a step further, explaining that Turkey, Qatar, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia were so determined to take down Assad, they poured hundreds of millions of dollars and tens of thousands of tons of weapons into anyone who would fight against Assad, including al-Nusra and al-Qaeda and extremist elements of jihadis coming from other parts of the world, and then this outfit called ISIL, which, as you know, is also ISIS. Returning to the text, Biden's admissions sought to exempt the U.S. from this operation as though Washington were innocent of sustained operations carried out by its key allies. That is simply not credible. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Hello, Carl, you're on the air.
Hey, Teresa. Thank you very much for everything you do. Wanted to quickly mention everything that happens in Northern Africa right now can not only be limited to but must include the fact that the interest to overthrow Gaddafi threw so much weaponry into the area near the border areas that were practically porous, especially in the southwest, which should be thought of as no coincidence that a surge of weapons ended up in the hands of Boko Haram. This is a formula that's repeated over and over and over again, and not to mention the political formula, which is any economic nationalist model out there of any country, such as Gaddafi was, I mean, especially as Libya was, is not to be tolerated. And what ends up happening, of course, is that ultimately the real internal fundamentalist will ultimately take over because they don't appreciate the standard way of handling things, and the nationalists still don't want that type of government either. So if we don't support their right to determine themselves from the interests on the inside of those countries, and I mean Iran did the same thing, we will always end up with these difficult folks on our doorstep.
I think you're right about that. And I could add that this is really a war against you and me as well. Just one corollary of that would be the death squads that the U.S. left worked so hard against to expose. The death squad techniques in Central America, the absolute intimidation, the attempt to produce a widespread terror of the police and of secret police has been echoed here. It's simply blowback. Some of those same techniques are here, especially... we've all gotten used to it, but believe it or not, there was a time when police didn't normally scream at you to get on the ground and beat the crap out of you if you didn't. That's a death squad technique. That came right up from Central America. And yeah. This war is blowing back to us in various ways.
Well, when people give you any type of guff about saying that you're the blame America first crowd, just remember there's always people inside, even in the days of Rome, that said, extending our life too far beyond our borders will lead ultimately to us being the repressors and then the people with less power in your own country lose. In other words, if you're somebody who's not economically well off and you're activating for going and beating up other people who are not economically well off, you're ultimately going to lose yourself.
Right on. Down with horizontal hostility. Thanks very much for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Another element in the suppression that I've been talking about is, of course, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the billionaire class, the corporate class, fairly indistinguishable, really. And one of the big things that the corporate class does to you is to make it normal in your mind to have a bank account. You should not have a bank account. If you do, you are supporting the people who are destroying the planet in various ways, and you're also draining your own funds. Get a credit union account. It's very easy. You will enjoy meeting with the people at the credit union. There are many good credit unions in this broadcast area and throughout the United States. They want to help you, and you will be so happy, and you will have so much more of your own money when you join a credit union. Take your money out of the banks now, please, and agitate for your municipal and civic organizations to take their money out of banks. It's not as simple as that, as we've discovered with Portland, which has a darn near blackmail relationship with Bank of America. I think I have time for one last call. Kathy's on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Kathy.
This is just a little thought-provoking with the Ferguson thing. Remember back in the Kennedy assassination, how they used Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald and all that stuff, made a whole scene about it. Those people weren't even really involved, but they used them. I think the police that was shot in Ferguson were shot by only fire, or and they weren't even police officers. I think they were prisoners, just like Jack Ruth and Lee Harvey, that were set up.
Good point, because the shots did not come from the direction of the protesters. We know that already.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks very much for your call.
Oh, you're welcome.
You've been listening to Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. This is the news you're not supposed to know. And coming up on KBOO Portland, I believe that we will have Chris Andre. I'm getting the nod on that. Okay, Chris Andre with news that makes horse sense. And I think you should stay tuned, because we're all in this together, aren't we? So we're going out to you at 90.7 FM in the inner KBOO area, other frequencies elsewhere, and via the World Wide Web at kboo.fm, and in that manner too, all the ships at sea.
Yes, yeah, stick around. A busy Thursday morning continues here on KBOO Portland. We're about 15 minutes away from Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Leanne Krantz speaks with local writer Megan Cruz, who has just released her debut novel entitled Call Me Home. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures with host S.W. Conser. Today's guests are cartoonist Betty Hawkins and Justin Bury, executive director for Portland's Community Alliance of Tenants. They've created a new comic entitled Know Your Rights, Don't Get Evicted. That is all coming up after we hear from Chris Andre, up next with Air Cascadia. Stick around, that's next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is looking for qualified candidates to fill two vacant board seats. The KBOO Board of Directors invites qualified KBOO members who are interested in becoming a board member to submit a candidate statement no longer than 500 words, which should include the applicant's experience, information about previous board or coalition experience, and why they want to serve on the KBOO Board of Directors. Please email your candidate statement to Timothy Welp at kboocommunity@gmail.com by March 13th, 2015. Candidates should also plan on being present at the March 23rd, 6 p.m. KBOO Board of Directors meeting to present a short statement about why they are interested in joining KBOO Board of Directors. Again, KBOO is looking for qualified candidates to serve on the Board of Directors. Application due March 13th, and public presentations will be made